live and on lockdown.
Are you ready?
Broadcasting from Edinburgh, Scotland and across the globe.
Listen here.
You're listening to Ramsey Unleashed, Going Beyond Borders podcast, the host Fraser Ramsey.
Hey, this is Afia Leatham, creator of the Frame Your Day app, helping you walk out every day in victory. I'm proud to be a sponsor of Ramsey Unleashed, Going Beyond Borders.
Hi, this is Zakiya Ringgold from NaturalSoapByZakiya.com, proud sponsors of the Ramsey Unleashed, Going Beyond Borders podcast.
And good day to wherever you are in the world. This is an artisan to Ramsey Unleashed, Going Beyond Borders podcast, the first one of the year of 2024. I didn't do that many last year, but now let's just make that changing that habit to do a bit more than just the one or few that I did. So I've got a guest that I connected with just via Instagram, who happened to be live on our story, talking about her life, and so I asked if she wanted to be on my podcast. And we're going to find out about her life and where she's from, and basically the brief title: she's been from jail. She's been widowed. She's had lots of infertility in her life through lots of ectopic pregnancies and miscarriages. We're going to hear her story about that and the journey. And we're going to hear how she graduated, just dissecting her life from beginning to end. But we may have to do a part two because it seems like there's going to be a lot to talk about. So it could be a long, we'll try and keep it within a decent time period. And then we'll see what we cover, obviously dissect as we go along. But I want to welcome Natasha Barsholom to the Ramsey Unleashed, Going Beyond Borders podcast. How are you doing?
I am good. Thank you so much for having me.
Okay, so tell us, where are you from? Where are you based?
I am currently in Las Vegas, Nevada, born in Van Nuys, California.
There we go. So how long have you lived in Las Vegas?
This time around, I actually just came back in December. I've spent the last 5 years in Denver, Colorado, with some time overseas in Medellin, Colombia in 2019. But born in California, was there until 94. My family moved to Las Vegas, was raised in Vegas, and then as an adult, moved to Denver with my husband, who is now passed away.
Well, that said, let's dissect your life, because with the title we've got, jail time, widowed, infertility, we're going to dissect more. There's more to that sort of title of the show and the sort of the podcast. So tell us, just as I do, I like to start at the beginning. So tell us about your life growing up and your just school life, education.
I'm a daughter to mom and dad, who were married 42 years. I have a younger sister by 3 years. Like I said, was born in California, spent my early childhood there, but then we moved to Las Vegas. We were then around my mom's side of the family. My mom and dad are night and day. My dad is from poverty and struggle. You could from the outside looking in, you could tell that the family my dad grew up in was struggling. My mom is born into money, show business, you know, dinners with Dick Van Dyke and Bette Midler and Debbie Reynolds and just great, that type of world. But loving parents. My dad was in the military for a little bit. My mom's a mortgage underwriter. My sister and I are 2 years apart. Looking back as an adult, definitely had a good upbringing. I didn't realize that as a child. What I seemed to struggle with as a young one was there was a lot of mental trauma growing up. Because my mom and dad were married for so long, we, you know, were impacted by a man and woman trying to raise a family and keep their marriage going. So a lot more mental anguish, didn't really grow up going without or experiencing poverty or abuse or drug addiction, anything like that. It was more my parents experienced trauma in their childhood, and they weren't taught how to cope with it, and it kind of bled into our family. My dad's dad committed suicide when my dad was 4 years old playing Russian roulette. Had a very abusive stepfather. My dad was molested, raped as a kid. And with having a mom and dad, with both of them very present in my upbringing, my dad was really the disciplinary in the household. Like I said, my mom was a mortgage underwriter, made really good money. So she was always off at work, and my dad was very hands-on in raising us. And my dad experienced a lot of trauma in his life. So it just felt rough as a child. I'm the firstborn. I look just like him. I really appreciate like his side of the family. Not that I appreciate the streets, but just the humbleness and the sense of loyalty that comes from struggling versus having a privileged life. Just very different mental, very different like perspectives on life. So as I started growing up, I kind of found myself trying to attach myself to things that reminded me of when we were still in California around my dad's side of the family, like family barbecues and eating together and just doing things where when we moved to Vegas, everyone had money, kids were with nannies. It was just very different. So as I got older, I gravitated towards people that come more from a background of street life. And that's when I found myself, you know, getting in trouble because I was hanging around people that I felt more comfortable being around. And next thing I know, I'm shoplifting and, you know, dealing with domestic violence, dating people that were no good. And it just in and out of jail from being kind of in the wrong place at the wrong time, hanging around the wrong type of people. Not really understanding as a kid the importance of mental health and what I was even dealing with.
What made that make sense? Yeah, what made you kind of, what attracted, I mean, obviously, what kind of drew you to the people, the wrong people, if you know what I mean, to the people that you shouldn't have been hanging around with, which caused you to start shoplifting or in all the stuff that you went through?
It was really just, again, the memories, the younger memories of spending time with my dad's family. Mm-hmm. You know, depending on where you're at, what city, what state, a lot of people that experience poverty or struggle, they have gangbanging or they have just children that rebel because they go to school with kids that do have things. It wasn't necessarily that I was hanging around bad people, but I was hanging around kids that grew up without having anything, just because I appreciated the perspective, like the way they carried themselves as people. To me, the trouble was worth getting in. It was worth it because I was around people that I was like proud to be around versus my sister took the completely opposite spectrum. She hung out with like college students and kids that were like more privileged growing up. They didn't go without, but they, in my opinion, were shallow and judgmental and cocky. They just had this arrogance to them where I enjoy being around more humble-minded people, more open-minded people. And growing up in Vegas, that's known as Sin City, it's like one or the other. You either are on this side or you're on that side. And when you're on the other side, not, you know, the privileged money, you tend to like get caught up in just things that are, you know, the best things to get caught up in.
Did you, with having obviously your sister more hanging out with, like college students and having a different path and you taking the path that you took, did you kind of, what's the word, Were you close? Or were you not still close? Or were you not close because of the different paths you were taking?
We were very close as young kids, but once we got like into high school, and it was very obvious that we had two very different types of friend groups, it created a distance between us, a separation. But we were 2 years apart. Like I said, we grew up with a mom and dad that never separated, very close family. So we still remained close, but not as close as we were as children, because I'm the oldest. So she was, in my opinion, she was learning from my mistakes. Okay, well, I could see my dad is from poverty and from the hood. So when he saw that I was gravitating towards these type of people and neighborhoods, he was a lot harder on disciplining me than he was my sister. And that was because my sister kind of watched my mistakes and took a different route. But now, if we fast forward to adults being 35 and 33, you know, I'm sober. I've never struggled with drug addiction. You know, in and out of jail lasted 2 years, petty theft, like getting caught stealing a shirt. It wasn't like I was doing home invasions or getting into big time trouble. Just doing little things that I guess brought attention, because a lot of the times when you're dealing with people that are experiencing poverty or broken homes, they don't have their dad around. They do things that get them in trouble trying to be noticed, trying to get attention. And I realize that now as an adult looking back, and I kind of just got caught up in that.
So at what period were you sort of, when did you realize that to stop the petty theft and realize that I can't keep going back and forward to jail every 2 seconds? When did you decide to kind of like, let's not?
When I met my husband. We met when I was 20 years old. Mm-hmm. We were in a 13, almost 14 year relationship. He comes from a very broken down home. He's from, you know, a bad neighborhood in Los Angeles, California. And he was the love of my life, but he definitely, just like my dad, experienced a lot of trauma as a young child. And really just wanted to be loved and accepted. And I think that's why I fell in love with him, because it was what it was like watching, being with him was like being a young child watching my mom and dad's love story. My mom comes from the other side of the world, you know, the other side of the spectrum, and my dad's from one side. And
so how did your folks meet? How did they, obviously your mom sort of being more the, you said like the movie style, the more the horse side, your dad more the poorer background. How did they meet?
They went to the same high school.
All right, got you. Okay. Yep. Interesting. So yeah. what did your mom actually do? Just mainly mortgage, or did you talk to
my mom? Her entire life has been in, well, as a young child, my mom was a musician, artist, poetry. She did makeup for Hollywood stars. It was really her mom and dad that were in show business, and like her sisters married, they had good money and good careers. And then they married men that had even bigger careers and bigger wallets. And it just kind of created an energy. They kind of all did the same thing on my mom's side, where my dad is from a single mom, no dad around. Dad committed suicide. You know, lives in a neighborhood in California that's not the best. Even though my mom comes from that, my mom is very humble compared to her sisters. And she didn't like the school that she attended. So she asked if she can go to one of her cousin's high school, which happened to be the same school my dad went to, which is how they ended up even on the same side of town.
They're kind of like the rough with the smooth almost a little bit, but kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you get me. So let's go into your journey from meeting your husband at the time of 20.
Yeah. Or
obviously you got married at some point. So let's dissect the kind of this part of your life, this sort of 14 year relationship. Let's tell us about the journey and what happened there, and what you, I'm guessing this is where the infertility will come into the title. Well, so let's dissect this whole section and just your process and what you went through.
Yeah, he was actually my first boyfriend. Prior to him, even though I was young, middle school, high school, I dated women. And I think I convinced myself I was a lesbian just because my dad was a Marine and from the street. So he was very hardcore disciplinary, build, you know, chop you down, build you up type of mentality. So I told myself I didn't like men. I dated women. I got with Phil. He was the first man I had ever been with. We were pregnant the first year that we got together. I made it to 5 months pregnant and had a miscarriage. After the miscarriage, I had found out that he was still married and had a young child himself. Tried to break that relation, tried to break up. I did break up with him, actually. Again, this is the first year we got together, about 7-8 months in after we lost the first pregnancy at 5 months. I find out that he's married. He has a 3-year-old daughter. I tell him I do not want to be with him anymore. It was a lot for me to deal with. I went from being with women to now falling in love with a man and then getting pregnant and then losing the pregnancy. So I fled the scene. I moved with a friend to Texas, like overnight. My friend got married to a man in the military and was moving to Killeen, Texas, and invited me to go. And I had said no originally because I had started this relationship. But when I found out he had a wife and a 3-year-old baby, I'm like, okay, yeah, I'll go with you. So I ended up going with her to Texas, was there for a month before Phil ended up following me to Texas. He came to Texas and, you know, we were together for 12, 13 years after that. But pregnant for the first 7 years that we were together every year. I had 2 ectopic pregnancies by the time I experienced infertility. The last time I was pregnant, it was an ectopic, but so the first one was a miscarriage. The second was an ectopic on the left side. They had to remove my fallopian tube. Went into emergency surgery, got out the same night. Looking back on the relationship, him and I definitely fell in love through our trauma. Even though I didn't experience drug addiction or abuse or anything drastic as a child, there was still a lot of mental trauma. A dad experiencing all the stuff he did, like I said, it bled through. And that's what bonded our love, was we both had these big holes in our heart. And
what was the kind of stuff that he'd been through in his life, the trauma? What kind of stuff?
So he was born into a family of gang members, mom addicted to crack. He was actually born addicted to crack. He's an African-American man from Watts, California. Watts riot. I know that you're overseas. You're not here in the United States, but Watts is one of the most dangerous neighborhoods in L.A. Imperial Courts. Dad, he didn't have a dad. He died in prison. His brothers are big time gang members. Just really broken down, home. Being a black man in the United States of America is hard enough. So when you're born into gang banging and no money and drug addiction and all of that, it definitely took a toll on him. He was the most beautiful man I've ever met, had a heart bigger than the world. All he wanted was to be loved, but he struggled with confidence. He struggled with self-love. He struggled with acknowledging his trauma to even exist. He wasn't when we first got together. I would be lying if I said he was, but within 2-3 years of us being together, and I think it was really like he knew I came from a mom and dad that were still together. Yeah. And his time around my family, all he felt was love and acceptance. So he clung on to me within the first 8 months of us being together, like white on rice. Like I said, I found out he was married with a three-year-old, and within a month, he had moved to Texas. But that really took a toll on him. He was very close with his three-year-old daughter, and he became an alcoholic.
So how, did you guys ever get married at all? Because he was still married. Did he divorce?
No, we were common law marriage. We were not. He was still legally married when he died. And we'll get to that. But long story short, as years go by in our relationship, I start realizing that I'm in a toxic relationship, even though him and I loved each other to the moon and back. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if I'll ever experience another person loving me the way he did. He definitely made me feel loved and was very good to me, but we were not good to ourselves when we were together. And, you know, after you're pregnant 2, 3, 4 times and you're not having children, but you're being told that you're healthy and there's no reason why you should keep losing pregnancy, you start to dig a little deeper and want to like start healing or acknowledge that something's going on. So I started to like pay more attention to the importance of mental health and trauma, where I grew up, you know, my whole life, I never even acknowledged that trauma was a thing or mental health mattered. But as I got older and looking back on like my dad and the problems within our family, and it just started hitting me as I got older that like mental health is a real thing. So when I started to acknowledge that mental health was a real thing, I started to kind of pull away from the relationship, but was still physically there. But it wasn't the same after like 4 or 5 years. Like it just, I wanted out, but didn't know how to get out. And I stayed in it because I didn't know how to get out. I'm trying to not cry. Sorry, I get a little emotional. Nope. But the stillbirth is really when things changed in my relationship. So a stillbirth is when you give birth to a baby that's not alive. A death certificate, all of that had to happen. I gave birth at almost 8 months in my home, in my bathtub. The only one that was there was him. And at that time, my grandmother, meaning my dad's mom, was getting ready to die. She was on dialysis and full-blown diabetic and legs black and purple from the knees down due to circulation problems and just a lot of health problems on my watching my grandmother die from. While dealing with the trauma that comes from now being pregnant 5 times and no children and all these different doctors telling you like no answers, you start blaming God, you start blaming yourself, and it just started becoming very dark for me.
What point was the stillbirth? Was that the last time you were pregnant?
No, that was like year 5, year 6 of being in this relationship.
Right, okay.
And remember, we were together for 13 years, and I was pregnant a total of 7 times. So not quite there yet. That's when I realized that I was in love with an alcoholic. I never really even paid attention to his drinking until my trauma started becoming heavy. And, you know, days of not wanting to get out of bed and days of praying, but praying to die and praying for God to take me and just not myself. I wasn't myself. Then my grandma died on the amputation table of finding out, of getting her legs amputated. And I, at that point, was weighing, I was at 367 pounds. Mm-hmm. So I just remember very vividly, we were living in Texas. I had a day of surrendering. I just prayed and let everything that was hurting me out, from screaming to breaking things, to journaling, to praying, to breaking things. It was just like a full day of chaos for myself. But I remember waking up the next day and just said, I'm not living like that anymore. And that's when my awakening really started. So again, I was 367 pounds. And instead of creating animosity with towards myself or towards God on why I can't have children and why I'm in love with an alcoholic that's still married, and why am I like convincing myself that my childhood was so traumatic when I had both of my parents and there was no drugs and there was no violence? Like, why do I feel so negative? Why am I so broken down? And I made a lifestyle change.
Just before you go further, one of my former podcast guests who's in the, obviously watching, somebody who has been through alcoholism, who you can, I'm going to show the comment for those, Caroline E. Blake. She went through, you can read it, she feels your pain, obviously, but she's been through alcohol through her life. And you can obviously, you can listen to the podcast from, that was actually, crikey, I interviewed her on the last day of, it was 2022, that was, my goodness, that was the last day of the year of 2022. I interviewed her because that proves how quick 2023 has disappeared. And I go, okay, that proves how time flies when you're having fun. You're welcome. Yeah, I can, because you're not on Facebook. I think Karen's on Instagram. We'll figure it out. We'll connect you both up, and you can have a
yes,
chat.
I would love that.
She's really cool. For you to have, I think you could maybe share some experiences and kind of thing, you know. So so carry on. Sorry, I just said you're
I appreciate that, and I love and hearts to you, Carolyn, and I, you know, I sympathize because I know the pain that you have felt. It sucks, but it's also, pain has become my armor. So I like to encourage people to embody your pain in the sense that it builds strength to keep going, especially when you include God. So kind of staying there, grandmother died again, like I told you, pretty much every part of Natasha was, when I look back at my child, not my childhood, but like my young adult years, all I see is the 5-6-year-old Natasha. That loved being around her dad and mom and dad's side of the family and barbecues and Spanish music and dancing and food and just a great time. I was extremely close with my dad's mom. My dad's mom comes from the South. She's born into a very racist family. Like, her uncles were imperial wizards of the KKK. She left the South at 13 years old, pregnant at 14 with my uncle, married a Hispanic that didn't speak a lick of English. She was just like an activist, very for the community, for the people. And I loved everything about my grandma. So her passing was very eye-opening for me. It wasn't painful because she struggled, and I did not want to watch her suffer anymore. So I was relieved when she was taken home. But when she died, it gave me a different perspective. And I started realizing that if the doctors are telling me that I'm healthy and I have a relationship with God and I keep getting pregnant, like, I have to take accountability for some of this. Like, why is it that I am not having these pregnancies full term? And I realized with taking accountability, even though it wasn't solely my fault that I wasn't having children, I was carrying on to this trauma. And most women, we carry our trauma in our womb space. So If I feel mentally just saturated with pain, then obviously I'm holding on to the pain that I have experienced, gripped tight, and it's just bottling up, which is why for me at 14, 15, 17, 20 years old, I was convinced that my life was just a shit show, even though it wasn't. But it was because when something bad did happen, instead of acknowledging it and like focusing on healthy coping, you know, mechanisms, I would disregard it like it wasn't happening, and it became too much at one point. So I cold turkey made a lifestyle change. I went from 367 pounds down to 150 in a matter of 2 years. I was pregnant one more time and had a miscarriage. And then my last pregnancy ended, it was an ectopic. I would have been able to possibly save the chance to not have to go through a partial hysterectomy if the hospital didn't drop the ball. So when I went to the hospital, I had already had an ectopic. So when I was going through the symptoms, it was familiar to me. So I knew right away, like, I'm pregnant again. I could tell what's happening. So I went to the hospital. They did confirm that I was pregnant and that it was a fallopian pregnancy, meaning the pregnancy is in my tube. But they did not confirm that my fallopian tube had already ruptured. So when your fallopian tube had already ruptured, the last time, going off of previous experience, they immediately put me into surgery. You know, they removed my fallopian tube, got rid of the pregnancy, and I went home. But the second time, they just confirmed that it was in the tube, but it hadn't ruptured, but it did rupture. So I was discharged and 12 hours later admitted into another hospital because I blacked out at a restaurant and found out that I was bleeding internally and had to have a blood transfusion because I was like 11 hours of bleeding internally because when I was at the hospital earlier that day, my tube had already ruptured. And that caused me to have a partial hysterectomy because of the amount of damage from the internal bleeding. It damaged my ovaries. And then that's when I found out I could not have children at all. So at this point, I'm wrong. So I had started the lifestyle change after the fifth pregnancy, right? But it wasn't 2 years later. I'm completely wrong with that. 1 year later, I had one more miscarriage, then my last ectopic. And I had dropped probably about 80, 90 pounds after that last time getting pregnant. And finding out that I could, like having a doctor say, you will not be able to have children. You don't have the womanly body parts to do it. Like, you don't have ovaries. You don't have fallopian tubes. You're not going to be able to get pregnant. I went crazy with the weight loss journey. And I lost another 100 pounds. And when I lost a total of 200 pounds, this is now 12 years into my relationship, I realized 100% that I was in an unhealthy relationship. And I changed. I did definitely change. My perspective on life in general changed, not just my relationship. And I realized that us humans suffer a lot from our own inflicted pain. Like, we don't know ourselves. We don't know our triggers. We don't know our trauma. A lot of what we don't like in our life is self-inflicted. We do have a role in it. And when I, like, looking back, even still to this day, I'm getting goosebumps because I was heavy set my entire life, like, real big. And there were so many times where I would look in the mirror and hold my stomach up or like make comments like, if I look this way and if I look that way, as if it was impossible. So I ended up convincing myself that it was impossible. But pain and consequences made me determined to say enough of all that, and then discipline and structure and endurance and patience with myself came into play. And then I was successful at being able to lose weight. And when you lose 200 pounds and you have visual proof that discipline and structure and endurance will make a difference in your life, even outside of a weight loss journey, I'm going to hold on to that knowledge. I'm going to not lose sight of that. I don't want to live a life of suffering. So if I, my whole life was heavy set and was made fun of for being big and all of those things, all that trauma that I was going through was self-inflicted, because I could have very easily picked up better habits and start treating my body as a temple instead of being an emotional eater and a social eater and connecting everything to food. So it made it, after the weight loss, I don't even know what came upon me. There was no problems within our relationship besides the understanding that it wasn't, if I truly loved him, it would probably be best for us to separate. Right. Because him and I were spending 12, 13 years trying to convince each other that we loved each other, putting ourselves on the back burner, which is why he became an alcoholic. He would cry himself to sleep in the bathtub. He just was like in survival mode, and I was in survival mode, and it's not a way to live. So I packed a bag. And I sat down with him and told him, you're the love of my life. That will never change. You're the first man I've ever been with. You know, I've learned a lot through this weight loss. And I just think we should take a break and try to like love ourselves for a moment. And within 28 days of us separating, he committed suicide.
Thanks. I guess he just couldn't handle it.
Yeah. And that's when my nonprofit was born mentally. Maybe not the actual events that we do, but that's when it really hit me. Even going through journals from, like, I have journals from when I was a young girl. My mom was really big into journaling, so I've always been into journaling. Everything that makes Natasha who I am is this spirit of just like mental stability, like wanting to have inner peace, God's peace. Like, mm-hmm. I don't care about money. I don't care about materialistic things. I don't care about the fancy cars and the reputation and the fame. My entire life, from a young girl all the way to now, I have been searching and craving God's peace, mental stability. Mm-hmm. And it got really dark for me, friend, after Phil committed suicide. His entire suicide was dedicated to me. I was not allowed at the funeral, you know. Friends and family that we had a very close group of friends and family that we hung out with at least twice, three times a month. Everyone cold turkey blamed me. I was like literally called a murderer, even though I didn't physically kill him. A lot of people were caught up on the fact that I was heavy set our entire relationship. I lose all this weight and I leave him. And because I grew up watching my mom and dad fight the way they fought to carry their marriage, I learned at an early age that your relationship is intimate between two people. So nights where Phil was belligerently drunk and breaking things and being, you know, not physically, but verbally abusive, I didn't pick up the phone and call all my friends and tell them. So all of the people that hung around us, family and friends, saw him in the light that I painted him in.
Go ahead.
And he was a great human being and he did love me, but it wasn't a fairy tale. So yeah. The outside looking in, I looked like the villain because he loved you when you were almost 400 pounds. Not even a year of you losing all this weight, you're gone, and now he's dead. And that made me, it made me really realize that mental health is extremely important, not even for the sake of ourselves, but the people we love, the people around us, even strangers. Disregarding your emotional state and how you carry yourself as a human is just something I'm not willing to do anymore because we don't know who it's affecting around us.
Tell us, what were you doing and when you found out that you committed suicide?
He committed suicide September 18th of 2018. He was still living in Colorado. Him and I moved to Colorado together. I didn't talk about that, but the last 5 years of our relationship, we were in Colorado. And when I left him, I came to Vegas where my mom and dad were.
Right.
So I was at home. My phone was dead the night of, and when I woke up, I normally don't wake up and go straight to my phone. I was probably up 2-3 hours. I go to turn my phone on. And the second my phone realizes it's on, I'm da-ding, 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 like millions of notifications, 60 calls from my mom, 50 calls from my dad, 20 calls from my sister, 30 calls from Philip's son. He also had a son that he wasn't very active in his life until the last 3 years of our relationship because I helped him build a relationship with his son who was like 17 when he died. But he didn't know how to be a dad, honestly. It intimidated the heck out of him because he didn't grow up with a mom or a dad. The streets raised him, really. I don't need to be honest with you. I don't really remember much from the day that I found out he died besides one text message from our closest friend and the way she worded how he died. She said, "Phil committed suicide last night. I thought you should know, even though everyone else doesn't want you to know, but he dedicated it to you." And the fact that she said no one else wanted you to know, like, I went through grieving him, but I'm just now grieving him. And he died in 2018. The first 2, 3, 4 years, it was more guilt and shame that I was experiencing to the point where I tried to commit suicide 13 times in 2018, and it put me into a mental hospital. And that was the worst experience of my life. The way the United States of America acknowledges mental health is just mind-blowing to me. I've never felt more disrespected in my life. I've never felt more judged. I've never disagreed with someone's solutions the way I did with theirs. I just will never forget the day I ended up in the emergency room. I tried to put a gun to my head. It did go off. Police were called. Ambulance was called. I went to the hospital. Was very truthful when answering those questions. Are you, you know, what made you do this? How often do you think about suicide? And because of the way I answered those questions, it was immediate. I wear wigs. So it was immediately take your wig off, give me your phone, strip you of your clothes, put you in this special room. And I went from the emergency room to an actual mental, like, hospital facility. What was supposed to be like a week, 2 week evaluation turned into 8 months. It was more me. I could have left at any given time, but I wanted to die. I was being very honest with those emotions. I didn't care where I was. It didn't bother me that I was in a mental hospital. I just didn't want to be here anymore.
What damage did it do to yourself when you tried? Obviously, the gun went off. Did it miss you completely, or what happened?
Oh yeah, no, it didn't hit me at all. I got scared and dropped it, and ended up hitting a TV. So the police were called, but I didn't hit myself at all.
Crazy.
Because I answered all those questions that had to do with suicide, and there was a gun on the scene and all this dramatic stuff. Like, I have a CDL and I'm allowed to carry, but the way I answered their questions is what put me in a mental facility. And I was immediately diagnosed with severe PTSD, but they called it CPTSD. I guess PTSD is just for military people, so it has a different title if you haven't been to the military, but it's the same thing. Borderline, PTSD, bipolar, manic depression. I was given, tranquilizer to go to sleep and Xanax for this and Imbaltinol. And that's what caused me to stay in there longer, because I was not willing to accept their diagnosis. I don't believe in it. I still don't. I feel like chemical imbalances is a trauma overload. It is not like I'm this broken object. I am completely against medication. Like, you have to pay me to take an aspirin. Like, I just do not want nothing to do with it. And really how I got out was just acting like I was taking the medication when I was realizing what was keeping me in there so long. I'm like, okay, just play their game and get the heck out of here, or you're going to end up mental. Like, they create mental patients. That's just my opinion. I know it's like a politic and religion conversation. It's very touchy for people, but I just do not agree. I don't agree. And I got out of there. And when I got out, I was an energy broker, selling electricity to deregulated states. I had been at the company for a while. I worked in Colorado with this company. I worked in Vegas with this company. They knew what I was going through with Phil dying and all the stuff. And when I got out, I had ran into my old boss, and he was like, hey, I don't know if you're mentally ready to get back to work, but we have an opportunity that we think would really help your situation. Give me a call if you want to hear us out. I waited a couple days. I called, and they offered me a position making really good money, salary, but I had to relocate to Medellin, Colombia,
right?
And run the call center there. They were opening a call center, and I took them on the offer, and I've been on the healing journey ever since. Environmental change was huge in my healing journey. I think healing is something that we do until we're no longer here. It's not like you get healed one day. It's just something that you have to stay aware of and keep at it. And I lived in Medellin, Colombia for 11 months. And when I first moved to Colombia, I was there a month, 2 months in a high rise in Poblado, Colombia, where all the Americans go. And I ended up building a relationship with one of my colleagues, someone that worked for me. And she was like, you're a paisa. I would always get called paisa. Like, you're one of us. We don't feel like you're an American girl. Like, the people loved me there. I barely speak Spanish. And the girl had invited me to move in with her family. And I moved in, and she lived in Colombia. It's not like California. In California, the higher you live on the mountain, the more rich you are. Right. In Colombia, it's the opposite. The higher up in the mountain you live, the more poverty you're dealing with.
Go ahead.
She lived way up there. Half of the house didn't even have a roof. It was like a man-made hut. they had no hot water. They had no electronics. We washed our clothes in the river. And it was the best 9 months of my life. I'm 5 years now I don't watch television. I'm big into reading. I'm just continuing the process of undomesticating, rewiring the mental. And that's really when this version of myself was born, was experiencing environmental change and just going back to the basics, like simplicity in life.
So let's tell us about, now you touched on, so how did God, I know you touched on how you God came in your life, but how did really now, like the change is now, because you've simplified your life a lot better from a job in those 9 months. Now, the healing process, where does God come into this? Where does the, obviously, this is where I want to, where does God come into your life? And this is where, with Jesus, and that's the thing, where does this point of your life come happen? And the change there, and what dissect that, please.
Yeah, well, definitely, God came into my life, even though I didn't bring him up much and didn't realize that he was very much so present in my life. Was at the time of acknowledging how saturated I was with pain and kind of being in a corner and no choice but to surrender. I felt God's presence, like my relationship with God was started in the mental hospital. You know, when my grandma was dying and he was there, I had a relationship with him, but I didn't really talk about it because I didn't realize what was going on. So when coming back from Colombia, when I went to Colombia, I was supposed to be there on a 5-year visa sponsorship for work. COVID happened. And to stay there for 5 years, they were requiring that I was vaccinated. I'm not getting vaccinated. No way in heck. So I ended up having to come back to the States. And the entire time that I was in Colombia, I did not have to count my breath. I did not have to pray for peace. I did not have to meditate. I just felt God's peace every day. And when I got back to the States, it was instant darkness. Like I did not feel mentally, spiritually, physically the way I felt when I was in Colombia. And I started analyzing, like, why did I go from feeling on a high to now back in a dark place? And I realized that in Colombia, I didn't have emotional attachment to anything there. I did not know anybody. I did not have memories at any corner store or anything. Nothing triggered a memory that was good or bad. It was all new memories. And I realized that. And instead of like saying, oh no, I'm doomed for life, or I have to move back to Colombia to be happy, I started figuring out ways to curate what was giving me that organic peace in Colombia. How can I give that to myself here? And I just found myself in the Bible more. I found myself attending church. Then I went from reading the Bible to going to church to Bible study to then meeting people that were very, very involved in volunteer work. Then I started volunteering. Then volunteering went to hosting my own events. Then hosting my own events. Ended up on the news. Then I ended up on the news and I end up in this, you know, mayor's office in Denver. And then I'm applying for my nonprofit, my 501c3. Like in the matter of 3 years, as soon as it, you know, as soon as I get back here, I realize that I'm falling back into a depression. I remembered what got me out of that state, like what helped get me out of that was surrendering, talking to God. So I brought God back into it, and I was told to pick up the Bible. I was told to go to church, and then the volunteering, and then, you know, every day that I don't.
What's the nonprofit you started?
We're called KOSM, Triggered Futures. So KOSM is an acronym for Knowledge of Successful Mindsets. We acknowledge mental health and houselessness. And we're fighting to end human suffering by providing different events and holistic services and a lot of focus on relationship building. Even looking back on my childhood when I ended up hanging out with the wrong people, it wasn't that they were the wrong people. They just easily get in trouble because they have broken upbringings. They have no mom, they have no dad, they have no money. But they're actually very beautiful people, just like the houseless community. Yeah, they may smell funny. They may irritate you because they ask for a dollar, but they're very humble, grounded individuals. Not all of them are, you know, crazy or addicted to drugs. And I just tend to stay prayed up and continue to talk to God and continue to absorb the word and be very intentional with what it is I consume, what I watch, what I listen to, you know, how I use social media. But yeah, we're KOSM, Knowledge of Successful Mindsets. We're known for an event called Winning Wednesday. We do an 8-month project from March to October. Every single Wednesday, I pull together different holistic practitioners. So we are able to offer Reiki, quantum energy healing, acupuncture, yoga, meditation. We do free haircuts. We do massages. We feed the community. We do open mic. We do music. We try not to be your average nonprofit that serves the houseless. We don't just pull up and drop off, you know, peanut butter and jelly sandwiches and a jacket. It's a 5-hour event. It's more like a family reunion where we're all mingling. I make a point to make sure that there's like an even amount of houseless people and then everyday people so that we could, you know, also acknowledge that our circumstances do not define who we are as individuals. And there's no reason why someone that makes $100,000 a year can't have a relationship with someone that's asking for a dollar on the side of the road.
Just a question. Now, a couple of things I want to touch on. What type of church do you go to?
Right now, I go to a church called TCMI. It's Christian. I'm not a big fan. It's funny you ask that because when we got approved by the IRS and was recognized as a 501c3, I was told that we could be classified as a church. And I'm still in the very beginning phases of my nonprofit. We just became a nonprofit in November. I still have to fill the board and get my duns. And like, there's still a lot of, this was not a goal of mine. I have no idea what I'm doing in a sense. I don't come from a, you know, background of lots of schooling and education. I stopped going to school in the 8th grade.
Reason I'm asking the question is the connection of, now, you obviously you read the Bible and you are trying to connect with God. I'm just curious the connection between setting up the way you're going down the business, the connection between doing holistic stuff, which technically all the Reiki and all that is technically not quite the connection between the Bible and that. So you're technically setting up a business which is of the world in a sense to what that's. This is the question is what is making you to do this, even though you're trying to, it's like you're sort of stuck in the middle yourself a little bit.
Yeah, because that's so funny the way you worded it. I'm a believer of God. I'm not a believer of religion. I'm a believer of the word, not the person, not the pastor reading the word. My God doesn't come with all this judgment and rules of how to be accepted by him. You know, I was baptized Catholic. So burning sage and tarot cards and all of that is very demonic in the upbringing that I had. Mm-hmm. And that for a long time created a lot of a lot of distance between me and God. I wasn't a strong believer because of all these, in my mind, all these contradicting things. Like, when I think of God, I think of love. I think of hope. I think of forgiveness. I think of faith. I don't like, oh, you know, you're not, you're doing this, so you're not allowed here. That's why I am considering, at first, when we were told by the IRS that we could be recognized as a church, I thought it was hilarious, because I'm like, I would never do that. I don't even like the typical church.
When just now, reason I'm just asking a question here, you talk about God a lot, but God, what, who does Jesus mean to you?
You know, Jesus sacrificed his life for us.
But what does he mean to you? That really, that's what I'm asking that question.
I've been asked that often lately. I don't really know how to answer it, to be honest.
My simple suggestion, with what you've gone, what you're going through in life and where you're at, is, I mean, church is not necessarily, it's not, it is God, yes, but the whole true factor of, if you read the Bible, is Jesus, and the fact that is your main key. And if you've been asked that a few times, maybe he's, as it says, if you read the Bible in John 3:16, and also the that also the there's a kind of the verse, but it's, he stands at the door and knocks. Even if you read Revelation, but understanding that maybe he's talking to you and wanting to really come into your life, so you're sort of there, but you're not there. And maybe
I agree and I disagree.
Exactly. But I'm not anything.
Oh yeah, no. And I'm not offended by you at all. I hope I don't offend you.
No. I've just asked the question, because obviously I'm just seeing the connection of, I'm trying to see your direction of where you're going. You're doing, it's sort of like you're in the middle.
And that's where I disagree. I don't feel like there's, and it doesn't mean that I don't hear you and I don't appreciate where you're saying. And a lot of people lately, especially lately, I've been hearing this frequently, but between you and I and whoever's watching, to be completely honest, when questions like you just asked are asked, I pull away from God. I said, God for me, or having a relationship with God or with Jesus or whoever, I, every single day, I have the same purpose on a daily basis.
Okay.
And that is to be the best version of myself, to treat myself with love, to treat others with love. I serve 100+ people on a weekly basis. I've made a lot of impact in people's life, and I know that it's not me. It's coming from God. But when I like follow the Bible, or I attend church every Sunday, or I dive more into understanding why people even ask me what Jesus means to me, that's where fear comes into play. That's where doubt comes into play. That's where judgment comes into play. And then that's when Natasha is no longer the best version of herself. That's when Natasha is no longer serving the community. So I'm very excited, because I think I am going to take on the title of being considered a church. And we're going to change things up a little bit on my end. I know a lot of people that are struggling from severe trauma, and they're terrified to start their healing journey, especially when you bring up the word God or Jesus. And it's because of the standard, like, okay, because I say I have a relationship with God, I have to like live and carry myself a certain way, or I'm not accepted by the average church. And I just don't agree with that at all. To me, it's very contradicting, and it's not something I even strive to have.
No, just I suppose in a sense, it sounds like by a lot of people who've obviously asked you the question or said the same thing.
They're either pastors or they're in church every single Sunday. But to be honest, not you. I don't know you personally. But these people that have asked me have laughed at me when I've invited them to a Winning Wednesday event. They have a very homeless people are on the streets because they choose to be there. And they're drug addicts and you shouldn't help them. And they are penny pinchers. They are not giving. They're not loving. They're judgmental, and I don't want to be that way. I just don't. And if knowing Jesus and knowing every scripture from the Bible verbatim, like is how I get accepted by people that are able to do that, and then I'm able to convince myself that I have an actual relationship with God or even understand. Like, it's just, I feel just offended, to be honest. I feel like people don't trust my faith and look at me as, like, a kindergarten level.
Best way to do this is not about what people think. It's just to do your own research and search yourself. Because that's all it's about. It's not about who you are. It's about just do your own research.
Yeah, or go off your own life experience. I mean, we have like 40 more hours of a lot more things that we could talk about. And
totally. Yeah. But do your own research really is the and best ways to figure it out for yourself. Because at the end of the day, it's you. It's got to figure it out and figure out. Whether it doesn't matter who it is, it comes along and asks you the same question or says something, figure it out. Say, okay. Why am I being asked this question? Why do you keep saying this to me? So, okay, let's go and figure it out. Do the research. Figure it out for yourself. You choose that you don't want to go down that road. You can figure it out. You can do your research. And at the end of the day, you can...
Actually, that's what I'm doing. And you'd be surprised. I'll show you. To my children's Bible, because so many people make me feel like I am creating more. I've had 57 followers on Instagram unfollow me ever since I've been talking about God more often. Because when they try to contact me directly or come into my inbox and have a conversation and ask questions like, who is Jesus to you, or what does this scripture mean? And I respond truthfully. It's the same type of feeling I experience when being in a mental hospital with a doctor, a therapist that went to school and probably has not experienced having a gun put in their mouth, being raped, being pregnant 7 times with no children, giving birth to a dead baby, you know. You probably haven't experienced those things. I could tell by the time you've spent in school. And you're sitting here with your notebook and you're asking me all of these questions that are focused around trauma. And when I answer them truthfully, have you ever thought about suicide? Have you done this? And I tell you honestly, and then your response is, you have PTSD, you have manic depression, you have bipolar disorder. Here's tranquilizer to go to sleep. Here's Zoloft to make you feel nothing. Honestly, it makes me want to say, F you. You have no idea what you're talking about. I appreciate the fact that you went to school and you have your degree, but I am not going to convince myself that I'm broken and numb myself and take tranquilizer that is used to induce comas on horses to go to sleep. Talk about research. When they gave me those diagnoses with all those medications on that paper and I researched what they wanted my solution to be, that was very funny to me. And I feel very similar energy when I have someone that goes to church, and I'm not talking about you at all, but I have someone that goes to church every single Sunday and speaks direct, a pastor speaks directly to a church of 400 or 500 people.
Yeah.
But then you're telling certain individuals that are houseless and don't have shoes on that they can't come into the building.
That's not right, basically.
Yeah, it's not. It's very contradicting. And obviously, I don't know what part of the Bible you're stuck on reading, but the Bible brings up the houseless and the poor quite frequently.
Totally.
So I, for me, I encourage everyone, whoever's watching, we're allowed to disagree, first and foremost. That doesn't mean that me and you don't get along and we're never going to talk again. We're supposed to share different perspectives. This is how we learn. This is how we do research. I now may hang up off of this live and go do some reading because of what this conversation striked up. That doesn't mean that I don't appreciate, but I could feel confident in answering questions the way I truly feel, knowing that it could just, you know, razzle some people's feathers. That does not make me feel uncomfortable at all.
Well, let's talk about going forward, because it's kind of just over an hour. So where do you now, with all the stuff you've gone through and what you're doing in your process in your as you're building, where do you, like, just end of January 2024, what's your kind of forecast going forward? Do you have any sort of set goals? Do you have any sort of targets you want to hit? Where do you see yourself going?
Yeah, so we built our nonprofit. Last year, we were able to serve 3,872 houseless individuals. This year, I have a goal of serving 5,000 plus. I am no longer in Denver. I am now in Las Vegas. So I'm going to start hosting events in Las Vegas. I'm working with some investors and sponsors and mentors that are going to help me really take my dream to the next level, which is to get a Triggered Futures tour bus and drive city to city and spend a couple weeks in neighborhoods of poverty and just help build confidence and inspire people to acknowledge their wounds and to strive to be the best version of themselves. And to feel confident telling their story. You're going to have people that disagree with the way you do things in life. And that does not mean that you cannot continue to do things the way you know how. And just continue to build a relationship with God and be around my family. My dad died of depression. My mom and dad were married for 40 years. So that's what brought me to Vegas. I'm here with my mom. I'm with my family. So just creating more memories with my family and continue to, you know, want inner peace. Because the more I crave inner peace, the more I'm making impact in my life, my family's life, the people around me, and vice versa. The more I stay inspired to do things and it's just, I don't really have goals that are related to money. I do have a goal that's 2 years from now. I will be moving out of America and going back to South America. I love Colombia. I'm into the simple things in life. I don't need a lot. Just, you know, my relationship with God and myself and do the best that I can do while I'm here in this realm on earth.
Well, I'll do is so, I'll ask Carolyn. I'm not sure if she's still watching, but I'll maybe get her to send me her number privately, and you can have a chat.
Okay, cool.
You can, you can have a sort of chat, and maybe you might be able to kind of have some sort of common denominator somewhere. That's what I'll do. But with looking at what you've been through and obviously your life, what kind of message do you want to send out there?
Success is a mindset. has nothing to do with your current circumstance, has nothing to do with your reputation, how much money you have in the bank. Success means to gain something you are aiming for. So understand what it is you're aiming for and continue to reach for the stars. Be productive in it. Give a compliment, speak to strangers, tell people to have a good day, embody gratitude, try to focus more on the things you have to be thankful for versus the things you don't have or the things you want. And don't be afraid to be yourself.
Where can people connect you?
I'm primarily on Instagram. That's Natasha. That's NATASHA underscore Triggered Futures. I also have a website. The link is in my bio on Instagram. I'm in the process of building my YouTube. And you could find me on CBS Colorado. I'm all over their news network. Been on the news about 5 to 7 times if you're interested. What's the website? KOSM Triggered Futures.
.com, yeah.
.org.
.org.
Yep.
.org. So we'll have all these links in the show notes.
When we hang up too, I'll send you the link so it's easier. Yeah,
we'll have all the we'll have a chat briefly after we've finished. We'll have all these links on the show notes of the podcast. On the video for those who are listening via Podbean. We are streaming live. We have been using Facebook, LinkedIn, and YouTube. Was going to try Instagram, but you have to have a professional account, so I realised that didn't quite work out. So that kind of wasn't the plan.
It's very easy for you to switch your account to professional, just so you know. All you got to do is go to your settings and change it.
Okay, there we go. I've learned something new. There we go. I will be able to...
I'm a guru on Instagram. I do a lot of marketing for people on their pages. So if you need help with Instagram, let me know.
Okay, I can figure that out. Right, I'll do it on the next one. That's what I'll do. Play around with that. That's the plan. But I just wanted to say thanks for the chat. Thank you for being on the podcast. Hopefully that was all right.
Thank you, Fraser. It was amazing.
No problem. So if, I suppose it's is it your first connection to Scotland?
It is.
There we go. That's our first time for everything.
I'm taking this as a sign that I'm going to Scotland next.
So there you never know. Well, maybe it'll be Columbia. You may do a slight detour via Scotland and then go back to Columbia. You never know.
Yes.
You never know.
Well, that was perfect timing. It's 2:13. I have to now jump on a Zoom call. I'm speaking to the city council in Denver about the house lists at 2:30. So.
We'll end the podcast, and for those who've been listening and watching all over the world, thank you. And we'll be able to, if you want to connect, you will have all the details in the show notes. And to everyone who's around the world, till next time, and we'll speak to you all soon. And I'll be chatting to this woman afterwards on offline. Anyway, yes. Everyone, take it easy, have a great one, and we'll speak to you on the next one.
Cheers.